Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here. Sean Rourke joining me as always. Sean, how are you on this very fine Monday as we record this podcast?
Doing great, man. You know, things are moving forward in the sports world. We got to watch a little of the NFL draft this past week. My son and I sat down and sat through the whole first round to see the Patriots trade their pick at number 28 right to bed after that. And, you know, you're starting to feel a little optimism. Spring is springing, and hopefully we're moving forward a little bit.
I enjoyed the NFL draft. I watched a good portion of it, and we'll discuss the potential of what the NHL draft could be in a little bit here. First, want to let you know that coming up, we will have an interview with Eric Lindros. He's back with the Flyers as an ambassador for the team, so looking forward to that one. Sean, though, let's start. The commissioner, Gary Bettman, right after last week when we did our podcast, and we teased it that he was going on with Ron McLean on Sports Night for the In Conversation segment, Gary Bettman talked about the restart, and the key takeaway is as many as four NHL arenas would be hosting games each day without fans in one of the scenarios that the league is looking at, and obviously it's without fans. We know that. It's unfortunate, but that's the situation we're in right now. Nothing is set in stone, but also another key takeaway is there'll be NHL arenas. So those two things, just to hear the commissioner talk about what they're discussing with the restart, I think lent a little bit of optimism that eventually we could see this, and they want to do the regular season too.
There's a long road to haul here. And I don't think anybody's being naive enough to think this is going to happen anytime in the next couple of weeks. But, you know, we've talked about this throughout. You're not doing your job if you're not thinking about all the different scenarios that you can have to come back. You know, they had talked about neutral site games and maybe that being a possibility. And I think they found out that it needs to be an NHL rink for a number of reasons, mostly, you know, stuff that fans would never think about, the number of locker rooms, the TV infrastructure that's in an NHL building as compared to a college rink. Things as simple as the goalpost, right? The way they're moored into the rink. The NHL, it's much more sturdy than it would be anywhere else. They use thinner pegs to put the nets down. So, you know, there's all these little small details that nobody thought of until they said, hey, let's try this and let's do this. So, you know, they're refining the plan as they go along. And I think the next step now is there's probably, you know, 10 or 12 cities that are on the top of that list of where they would like to go and what they would like to do. And now they're going to start vetting them. And, you know, they could get down to anywhere from 2 to 4, I think, at some point. But they'll have some backups because the situation is constantly changing. If you look right now, there's parts of America that are opening. You know, Georgia opened on Friday and is opening more today with restaurants and assorted other things opening. And other places like where we are here in New York and New Jersey are still a long way away, probably the whole Northeast. So they talked about Edmonton, and then maybe 2 days after Colin Campbell mentioned that on a Toronto radio station, Edmonton came out and said, we're not having any sporting events until well into the summer. So, you know, Alberta as a whole might be out. So I think this process will continue for a long time.
The commissioner was very clear on that this is not anything that's happening anytime soon. But like you said, you got to be talking about these things. Look, I mean, the first step toward resuming the season would be for the players to actually be able to get on the ice. And that isn't happening yet. So that tells you how far away we are. But he did touch on the potential, you know, for restarting when you get to training camp. He's going to need a 3-week training camp to get this thing up and running. And then the players would be hopefully ready to play in some regular season games, because that's another thing here is they want to finish the regular season and then go into the playoffs. Funny thing is, the first thing I thought about when they talked about having these at like the college arenas was blue line cameras and video replay, right? And coaches' challenges and things along those lines. So you have to have that infrastructure there as well. And you need the NHL caliber locker rooms and the medical facilities. I mean, Sean, there's so much that they have to do. If you really sit down and lay it all out of what it's going to take to restart, yeah, it's the communities that you can go to that aren't as impacted, but then players are going to have to get tested. Arena staff that has to be there for the building to be open, I assume they'll have to get tested. Heck, the Zamboni drivers might have to get tested. And that's not even team personnel. And then you're going to have all the team personnel and you're going to be quarantined in one city. It's a lot. I mean, it is a lot. That's why everything it's talked about here to me is always just, look, it changes on a day-to-day basis because there's so many things here to evaluate.
And logistically, it's just at times it has to be overwhelming. I know there's been some conversations, you know, with sports leagues across the world, the German Bundesliga, the soccer league, they're trying to reopen. And I read a story where they figured that for an 11 player team or a 23 player team, I guess, if you count all the reserves, it's over 100 people that need to be involved in a completely empty arena when you get down to all the support staff and everybody else that's involved. And then if you're going to keep them quarantined as well to not allow outside stuff in, you know, these are all things that need to be thought about. So the logistics are going to be unbelievable. And fortunately, there's a long runway and there's a lot of really smart people, you know, looking at this, not only at the very highest levels where, you know, the PA is talking to the NHL and it's, you know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly and Steve Mayer and whoever else might be involved, and then on the PA side, but down to every department, right? Like broadcasting's doing their due diligence. The trainers are doing their due diligence. Everybody's doing their due diligence and feeding it back up the chain of command. Hey, this is what I need. You probably didn't think of this, but this is what we need, and how are we going to make this happen? And here's how we can figure this out when we might not have exactly what we need, but still make it happen. So a lot of people working very hard over very long hours to try and put some hockey in front of all of us.
Yeah, and we touched on it at the top with the NFL draft, you know, and I thought it was very well done. I thought it was well received. So the commissioner, Gary Bettman, with Ron McLean, floated what he's terming the trial balloon about having a June draft still in the National Hockey League. I mean, look, as we stated off the top here, everything being discussed here is subject to change. Nothing is set in stone. They haven't ruled anything in at all. But I found this idea to be fascinating because it would be done before you have the final standings, but you can go off of points percentage, number one. And if everybody's played at least 68 games, if you want to do it for everybody's games, fine. You could cycle everybody back to what they were at 68 games. And it's very imperfect, right? Because you don't have a finished season, and then you have all the, what happens with the trades and what happens with all things like that that we see at the draft. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's very interesting, but I think maybe there could be too many questions and not enough answers.
Personally, I just think, you know, one of the things that everybody's talked about in trying to get all of this started back up is the integrity of the season, right? The integrity of the regular season and whether we can finish it, the integrity of the playoffs and whether they're 7-game series or 5-game series or 3-game series. And people saying, look, it wouldn't be right if there was only a 3-game series or a 5-game series. Matter of fact, if I think we go back a month, that might have been one of the things that you suggested, was that the tournament would not be a true tournament if it wasn't 4 best of 7. Series,
I think, right? It's gonna be best of 7 all the way. Yeah.
So what about the integrity of the draft, right? And the draft lottery and who qualifies for it and what happens with all those picks and when the draft is conducted and everything that goes along with that. I mean, there's an integrity to that, and there are no perfect solutions, but I would think, you know, measuring, hey, let's get ourselves on the calendar in June when people, there's nothing going on as everybody kind of tries to get back to playing maybe later in the summer and having that window that the NFL had this week. But let's not forget, that was the NFL's legitimate draft window. They didn't jump through hoops to get into that window to try and generate interest. They were going to have interest at that number at that date anyways. It was bigger because everybody's watching TV at this point and is dying for sports, but they didn't force that window in. It was the end of the season. It made sense. The players had already played their season that were going to get drafted. They had been scouted. The meetings had taken place. Everything was right. The standings were complete. The Super Bowl had been contested. That's not the case here, and you're just kind of making things up. I'm not saying that it can't happen, but you're not going to please everybody, and I really do think you have some integrity arguments there over conditional draft picks. And, you know, we still don't even know what the format of playoffs would be, and what if a team was allowed into the playoffs, it was bigger than the top 16, and they were still eligible for the draft lottery, and they won, and then they went on a run like an 8 seed's done numerous times in the past 10 years. So there's definitely some issues in trying to figure out that draft in the June window as it should be.
No, I agree with you that there are issues. There's no question. That's why I said there might be too many questions and not enough answers. And your point on the integrity is fair. Absolutely. I mean, you're right. I am the one that said about a month ago, I don't think you can have 5-game playoff series if you want to award the Stanley Cup in a traditional way that's become tradition now. Is you got to have 4 rounds of 7 games, I think, and maybe you do. But the thing is, with the draft, you can still, it's not perfect, and it does have some integrity issues, but it's not the same to me as awarding the Stanley Cup. I mean, you are awarding a first pick, but you kind of know the teams already that are going to be in there, and not much is going to change over the, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to convince myself of the argument as I'm talking to you here, Sean, but I kind of just like the idea of it. I think it's very interesting. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if the NHL knows it's going to happen. But there, you know, I was asked a question about it, and just what about the combine issue, right? I mean, I don't know. You tell me if you agree with me, but I think the players that are going to be drafted here in this draft, they're well known by now, and none of them are playing any games. So you can interview them on Zoom calls or on the phone or FaceTime or wherever it may be. Do you really need to test them at a combine when you've all scouted them? I guess it's imperfect, and it takes some of the integrity, like you said, of the whole draft process, but I think it still can be done. Where are you on that? Am I just trying to convince myself of something here? I don't know.
Well, that part's not going to change. The players that are going to be drafted aren't playing again before the draft, whenever it is. You're never going to see them play again, but teams have all the film they need on them. They have everything they need they have everything they need on them. I don't have an issue with that. They're available to be spoken to. What I do have an issue with is, let's, you know, talk about the San Jose Sharks and the Ottawa Senators and the New Jersey Devils and all of those teams that are in that two. We already know Detroit's the one, are in that 2-7 range, and either a hot streak or a cold streak, you know, coming down. Then you look at the Kings, they won 7 games in a row before the pause came and kind of moved themselves up the standings. You know, if that streak runs out, they hit another cold streak, they come back. Now they have better odds to win the lottery. You're talking about a franchise player. You're talking about a Connor McDavid the way they're talking about Alexis Lafreniere. So all of a sudden you're going to be like, well, we're just going to take it where it is now, and we're going to throw everything into a pot, and whoever wins, and all the integrity's there, and congratulations, you got Lafreniere. You know, look back to the Crosby draft, same thing, right? Everybody was eligible to win. There's people still mad about that. So I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but there's going to be some issues if it's not done in a traditional way.
It's a trial balloon, like the commissioner says. And I just think it's an interesting topic to discuss. It's an interesting debate to be had of how it would work. There, like I said, there may be too many questions and not enough answers for it, but time will tell. What we do know, and it's the last thing I wanted to get to with you, Sean, before we bring on Eric Lindros, and it kind of bleeds right into our discussion with Eric, what we'll talk about with Lindros, is the New York Rangers. They were involved in that all-in challenge, right? The all-in challenge is the brainchild of Fanatics founder and executive chairman Michael Rubin. It's to feed the hungry, especially at this time, very important. The Rangers put up an all-in challenge auction to skate and play against members of the 94 Stanley Cup championship team at Madison Square Garden. The opening bid was for $5,000. 42 bids were submitted, and on Saturday, bidding closed at $120,500. That's how much that Stanley Cup championship still resonates with fans in New York.
Math was never my strong suit, but $6,000, if I had some disposable income to be 1/20th of that team, I might pull that off, right?
I wouldn't, but if you want to, go ahead. Sure.
Come on, man. Just think about that. Think about that team and who was on that team. I mean, just complete hockey royalty. Brian Leetch, Mike Richter, Adam Graves, Mess. Like, you, I mean, that was such a loaded team and so iconic to this area, especially, you know, everything that they accomplished, and to be able to share the ice with them, probably share, you know, some more stories afterwards, and, you know, sit in the locker room and tell some stories and have a good time. And, you know, the money well spent and will be used wonderfully. And, you know, I'm glad it hasn't ended there, because other people are starting to put in their all-in challenges now. I just saw today Brent Burns is doing one where you get to go out to his ranch and you get to hang out and go on a safari. He's going to cook you a meal. You're going to check out all the animals on his ranch. Now, that's a day worth spending right there. I can't believe we didn't come up with that last week when we came up with our ideas.
it's great that the bidding goes for 120,000 plus. This all pro Meals on Wheels, No Kid Hungry, America's Food Fund, Feeding America, World Central Kitchen, they're all going to get a piece of that. Austin Matthews had a game used jersey, and Toronto Maple Leafs tickets that sold for 28,000. People are spending their money to do this, but I was impressed with the 120,000 plus for the Rangers, and that there were 42 bids for it. And your team, by the way, part of this deal is your team gets to be coached by Mike Keenan. Mike Keenan was the coach of the 94 Rangers. Now he's going to coach against his guy and coach your team.
He'll know all the secrets too, and he'll play all the mind games with them. You got a good chance of winning. But, and it's great because all that money is going to, you know, help feed the needy. And, you know, you watch the news and you look around. Like, I know here in New York and in New Jersey, the demands on the food bank are 100% year over year from what they were last year. You know, people are feeling this and you know, trying to deal with it and being put in situations that they never imagined themselves in. And all of the food banks throughout the country are really struggling to keep up with demand. So certainly this is going to help, and other things as we go forward are going to help as well, and help a lot of people that never expected to be in this kind of a situation.
Yeah. And our guest today, Eric Lindros, we've teased it enough. He is part of that. He's also got his own all-in challenge going. And he was recently named an ambassador with the Philadelphia Flyers. So he's back with that organization. We were able to catch up with him. Here is that interview with Eric Lindros. Eric, thank you so much for jumping on with us. You're a Flyers ambassador now. What does it mean to be back with your old organization?
It feels great. It means a lot. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've been working on this for a long time, and it started with Paul Holmgren. And I really have to thank him for getting the ball started, the ball rolling, and then working with Valerie to finish things off. So, I think we're all looking forward to seeing some hockey, some live hockey. And once that starts, then everything else will jump right into action, and let's get busy.
There's never a bad time to reconnect with an old team or anything like that. But yeah, you've kind of picked the perfect time. I mean, you look at the Flyers now, it seems like, you know, they've kind of found their way after a couple of difficult years, and, you know, have some young players that are coming into their own in that veteran core. When you look at the Flyers now, what do you see for them in their future?
I like it. I think they've been playing well up to when things had to stop. They're playing well. They do. They've got their veterans who are always, you know, real steady. Drew's a terrific captain. I like the way Drew plays, and year in, year out, you know, he's been real solid. Voracek's always pretty good. You know, they got a good group, and then they have Carter Hart in there. Konechny's played extremely well. You know, they got a mix of some older guys and some younger guys, and it's working out. I think they really like their coach.
You're coming back to the organization now as an ambassador. How do you want your role with the Flyers now to evolve? And do you see it becoming bigger than it is? Any interest in becoming more of a permanent job? Or is it more just you're happy with where it is now? How do you envision, you know, this and what it could become?
You know, I look at this as, you know, it's a great opportunity to get started. In terms of having anything to do with personnel decisions and whatnot, I don't sit and watch hockey all the time anymore. I don't travel to the game. I'm not, you know, if you're going to do something along those lines, you just don't dip your toe in. You can't be halfway. And I think you see that in any profession. I think you can call out the people in broadcasting that don't do their homework all the time. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. And I don't want to be that guy when it comes to making personnel decisions and affecting people's lives, and leave that to people that are in it fully. I've got lots going on here in Toronto. I'll get into Philly pretty regularly, but not enough to, I don't think, under the current circumstances, to have anything larger than what we're talking about now.
But down the road, I know. Look, now you're busy with your family. You have a foundation going on. You know, a number of things. But do you have an interest in having a more high profile hockey job, or is that not something that is in your future?
It's a tough one to answer. I'd never say no, but at the same time, I don't see something like that happening for the next 5-7 years. Even 10. My kids, my oldest guy's going to turn 6 here in June, and my twins will be 5 in September. So we've got a long way to go around here. I like it the way it is. So, I'm pretty content.
So what you're saying is you've got your hands full, pretty much.
there's lots going on. Family's one thing, but there's a number of other things that I got involved with and enjoying that, learning a lot with it. We're busy up here.
Did I read correctly? Your kids are just starting to play hockey now?
Yeah, they all skate. They all play hockey. It's that learn to skate program that they have up here. They're on the ice a couple times a week, and they enjoy it. There's an ice rink with underground, with the frozen pipes in the park across the street, and kids are over there skating quite a bit. We're pretty blessed here in Toronto with our city having some of the, just great places to go and skate and go and play shinny and to go, pass the puck around and have some fun out in the winter months. So we're really lucky for that.
I read that, when you go back to Philly and taking your family there too, to have your kids see, number 88 hanging in the rafters, right? And to learn a little bit about your playing career, your past, is that something that you're interested for them? I mean, they're still young, I get it, but for them to see, yeah, hey, this is what Dad used to do and this is what he was able to accomplish, is that important for you?
Well, listen, they're gonna, I think inevitably things come out. YouTube is one thing that we had to keep an eye on. My oldest guy got out there on a Saturday morning and he got into the YouTube video, and there was someone had put together some sort of collaboration of hits, and he's just a little guy, but he was running around. It wasn't the way I thought Saturday was going to unfold, but I think things get out every once in a while, and that let it take its course. But they were down for the jersey ceremony. They were still obviously very young.
Yeah.
Carl's been down a bunch of times since. Every time you get a chance to go into a pro locker room like that, it's a thrill, and hopefully now they'll get a chance to come along and tag along when we head down and have some of their own memories.
What's the best part of that? I mean, you basically grew up in a pro locker room, and much like reporting on hockey or any sport, you know, that's your workplace and that's what you do. But to see it through the eyes now of your kids and to be able to give them those experiences, do you just step back and kind of watch them take it all in?
Yeah, you watch them take it all in. And you also watch the guys that go the extra mile. Elliot and Carter Hart in the room. My kids love goalies, and they've been fantastic with the guys, the young guys. My guys Claude Giroux there's a bunch. There's a bunch that just go the extra mile to make a kid's day, right? It's nice to see. It really is. It's super nice to see. It's one of those things that I don't think when you're playing you really truly appreciate it as much as when you see it after, and you certainly see it in a different light when it's your kids that are benefiting from the extra bit of attention that a current player is giving them.
You mentioned the Flyers today, and you're talking about some of the guys on the Flyers. What if you were a player today, right now? How would you be handling this? The season pause, not knowing when to go back. What would you be doing? How would you be dealing with all this, do you think?
I don't know. It's a tough situation, and I don't know what you want to be optimistic that things would turn around, but I really don't see anything happening until there's the vaccine, to be honest with you. I'm no expert in the. I'm just reading and watching the same stuff mm-hmm. as you do. But that's what I kind of when I leave when I turn off the TV, I keep thinking about a vaccine and yeah. nothing really occurring until that we get something happening there and something's pumped out around the world. There's talk of something coming in September, possibly. You know, everyone's got these different guidelines and different agendas for it. We just need something that to get started and to get rolling, and then we can get back to the way, I'm not going to say the way life was, but you know, a great portion of it. So I don't know. I think you don't want to lose your base of physical fitness. So I think a lot of guys are everyone's trying to stay fit. I don't know what you'd be doing. I don't think that, I mean, up here, there's no access to ice rinks. Everyone's right. shut down there. So you're not skating. You know, what else do you do? I think it's a lot of the bike, a lot of the running hills and you've probably got some sort of a gym system set up in your house. And, you know, that's where it's at. I can't see, I don't know. Maybe you go back to the old days where you used to shoot pucks in the garage. I don't know. I don't know what the guys are doing. Good question. I haven't been driving around stalking the Leafs that are, living in the area.
Well, maybe yeah. you should get back to us. I'm just curious if you're doing push-ups with all three kids on your back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, there'll be one or two of those. It'd be a short video.
So, but Eric, when you look at the game now and where it's come and how fast it is and how open it is, it's very different than when you played. Where do you think Eric Lindros would fit into today's game?
I think I think humans are made to adapt. And anytime you're given certain guidelines, you just change. I think guys that played in whatever era could for the most part change. If you can skate, and you can pass, I think you can adapt to the different areas. What really is setting this apart though is the speed, and I think the puck handling ability is better now than ever. It's incredible what these guys are capable of doing. You know, some of the plays that are being worked out. It's fantastic. It really is. It's wide open hockey, and you know, once the playoffs come, then it's, you know, it tightens up a little bit. But no, it's fantastic. But the skill level, the ability to do these things at the rate of speed that they're doing them. And boggles my mind.
Who do you like watching?
I like, we get Toronto a lot here, obviously. Mm-hmm. And one of the big rivals because of, the playoff matchups has been watching, you know, when Boston is around, or they're playing in Boston or Boston's here in Toronto, that, you get a chance to watch, Bergeron and watch mm-hmm. him watch him play. He's so good. He really is. I mean, yeah, he's got Pasternak, finishes, and Marchand's having incredible time, incredible years. Like he's a fantastic player in his own right. But to watch Bergeron, just to do all the little stuff that he does, all the the starting shifts with possession, with face-off wins, giveaways. He just never really just gives up the puck. If you're going to get it off Bergeron, something really has to happen. He's not one to just give a freebie. He's a fantastic guy to watch. I think he's a lot of fun to watch.
And he's tougher than people give him credit for.
He is. Absolutely. Absolutely. That whole team is, Boston seems to have a real, real good pack mentality. And I think that led to a lot of their success over the course of, I think you look back to what, 5 years now, they've been, not longer, just a real dominant organization. They've been a good organization to watch.
They're sort of like a throwback team that can play and and dominate in the modern game today. Kind of a mix of generations, aren't they?
I think they wear people out. I think that that pack mentality that they have wears teams out. I still think that there's a bit of fear that people have when the opposition isn't afraid to make big hits, and Boston will go out of their way to do it, and then back up the player that does. That's the thing I don't understand. Some of these hits that occur that are absolutely 100% clean, and then right away, so they, you know, someone's popping in I don't quite get that right now, but Boston certainly they're not shy to play physical and to back it up.
So we just talked about a highly underrated player in the current game. I want to talk about a highly underrated player of your generation and one of your teammates. We just did we're doing, to kind of pass the time here during the pause, we're doing the greatest players at each position from the expansion era on, so from 67, 68 on. This week we're going to run the left wings. And your former running mate, John LeClair, came in 15th on that list. I had him way higher. I think Dan had him higher as well. So you can't blame either one of us. But I'm curious, having played with him for so long, what made him such a special player? And is he still underrated?
Johnny's demeanor really doesn't change whether he's on the ice or off the ice. He's just a solid, solid person. Came to Philly. He just loves to play the game. He came to Philly, and for one reason or another, is he started scoring a lot of goals. And our styles with Michael Renberg seemed to click. Johnny has a real big shot. He certainly has a playing with Johnny. His slap shot, you know, right around All-Star time. They get out the gun and they test all the guys. His shot certainly had a more zip than anybody else that we had in our organization. And then his ability to score, I think, around the net, I don't think there was another player that was better within 10 feet. And that's saying a lot. So you've got people with the way the rules were that are all over your back, and he's able to deflect. He's able to grab a rebound and roof. He's able to, make a quick move and do something. But again, this is with people, defensemen doing whatever they needed to do or whatever they wanted to do to stop him from scoring. So he was a real good passer, powerful skater, really strong. Some guys are gym strong and some guys are farm strong. Johnny LeClair is farm strong. He wasn't getting bounced around at all. In fact, I think he was one of the first to do the reverse bump. You're in the corner and you're going to get hit a little bit from the one side, and he would just kind of, back into people. And I think it took people by surprise on a number of occasions. He's a great person and competitive. Funny, his humor is pretty good. He's got a real dry sense, and I appreciate that. Johnny's a loyal dog. He's a good man.
Everybody in the league at the time hated playing against your line. I'm curious, was there a forward or a forward line that you really didn't like playing against?
Didn't have to go far. I mean, it was in New Jersey. Like, I don't think there was. Bobby Hulick was probably the most underrated guy. No one really paid attention to Bobby Hulick until the Rangers signed him for the money that they did. Mm. He big check. He scores 20 goals a year. When you played against Bobby, he didn't give up much. He was so conscientious defensively and so strong at everything he was doing. He could play physical. He could, face offs, corner work, things like that. I think Bobby Hulick was one of the most underrated guys that played.
He's one of the smartest hockey players I have ever been around.
Yeah, he did it all, and not only that, but he scored his 18, 24 goals a year.
Before we let you go, I definitely wanted to ask you, Eric, about the All In Challenge that you're doing. We, before we brought you on, we were talking about how
the Rangers won and to skate against the 94 Rangers at Madison Square Garden that went for $120,000 and $120,500. You're doing one to give fans in Philly a game day experience with you. They could skate with you at a morning skate, be on the ice for a puck drop. I'm curious, when you were a kid, who would you have wanted to have a game day experience with?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I got a Mark Messier stick when I turned 16 from, remember John McCauley used to be in charge of NHL refereeing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I played with his son, Wes, who referees now. We played at St. Mike's and I got a stick from Mark Messier. So I'm going to go with a game day with Mark Messier and that side. No, the Flyers did a really nice thing. They kind of said, whatever you want to do. And, you know, they opened up everything. They opened up the whole rink. They, it's one, you know, the principal person and then 11 friends. And, everything from the puck drop to the, you know, the suite and the fully catered situation and whatever you need. You have the run of the whole rink, just shirts, sticks. but the fun part, I think the real fun part will be after the morning skate, that we get the ice and can go out and be on the ice. How often can you say that you got to skate at the Wells Fargo Center and we're around the dressing room? You can get a tour of that and be around some of the guys at the pregame skate. I think that's going to be a real nice experience. And the Flyers did they really opened up and have a great, great offering here. So yeah, it's fun to be a part of, and the All In Challenge is doing well, and hopefully people continue to bid and more money's raised for feeding the people that need it.
Hopefully we're going to see it soon, and we're going to see you out there with whoever wins that bid, and that they spend even more than they spent to skate with the 94 Rangers to make it happen.
I don't see this going higher than that.
Well, I don't know, man. It's Philly. It might.
Well, there's really good fans in Philadelphia. They think for themselves for the most part, and they're a good loyal crew, and I know they're going to do whatever they can to help out and get money to the kids, the elderly, and our frontline workers. So, big thank you to all those people. And I guess what I was just saying, stay safe, be well, and stay safe, people.
For sure, you as well. It was great catching up with you. It's awesome to hear you so happy and settled in your new life and kind of going in that direction. And we really appreciate you giving the time to chat with us a little bit.
Great. Well, thanks, Sean. Thanks, Dan. And we'll see you down the road.
Sean, that was great to catch up with Eric Lindros. He definitely sounds well, sounds like he's happy with what he's doing right now. And it's good that he's back with the Flyers, though, right? I mean, I think that, you know, being part of the Flyers is important to him. It's part of who he is. So it's good that he's back with the Flyers. I thought that was it's good to hear from him. And one of the things that we did touch on with him was the left wings. And that's what we're doing this week, right? John LeClair is number 15. By the way, Sean, I just want to point out that I had him at number 9. And you had him at number 10. So as you said, you had him higher. I had him higher than you did when you mentioned that to Eric Lindros. Just point that out.
As usual, you're smarter than me.
But this was, look, I mean, we're going to run it on Thursday. This was, I still think the goalies was probably the most challenging to do this one. But there were some names on this list that I didn't expect to get on this list. I wasn't 100% sure if John LeClair would make it on, or a guy like Steve Shutt or Johnny Busick, right? I mean, you know, where do the people have Daniel Sedin ranked in terms of left wing? You know, he had a great career, but is he top 16 in the last 53 years of the National Hockey League? Answer for our group, he is. So where did you make of all this?
Well, the answer for me is he wasn't. He didn't make my list, and he finished 10th overall. So I think I was a little off. The one that shocked me, look, Alex Ovechkin to me, you know, is the premier guy. And then who comes behind that, right? And I know a lot of his career was before 67, 68, but Bobby Hull was a four-time, first-time All-NHL, first-team All-NHL after 67, 68. I think he was 9 times overall. He had a pretty good second half of his career, and I think I rated him a lot higher than other people did. So for me, that was one. And then the other one, that I really struggled with was what I was going to do with Paul Kariya, because, you know, he was cut short by injuries and you know, played a lot on the West Coast where maybe some people didn't see him a lot. A point per game guy for almost 1,000 games, but you kind of extrapolate out what that could have been if he had stayed healthy and you know, one of the greatest talents I've seen at that position. So I had him pretty high as well.
Yeah, I had Kariya at 6. You had him at 5. Bobby Hull, we both had at number 2. The one that was the struggle for me, and Bobby Hull to me was not a struggle actually, because of the fact that he was a 4-time first team All-Star from 1967 on, and a 1-time second team All-Star. Didn't play a ton, but he was the best at that position in that span of time. So that to me was why he was an easy one for me at number 2. Luke Robitaille was number 3. For me, the struggle one was Ilya Kovalchuk. And I had him high. I put him at number 7. And I'm looking at your list right now, and you had him at 14. And the reason why I had Kovalchuk at 7 was I look at everybody behind him that I have ranked behind him, and I just said, simply put, I thought Ilya Kovalchuk was a better player, more skilled, better player than a number of the other guys in the list. And I wasn't going to allow myself to be swayed by the – which is a lot of times a big time deciding factor for me in these votes was, you know, how many times was he a first team All-Star? How many times was he a second team All-Star? For Kobe, he's only been a first team All-Star 1 time and a second team All-Star 1 time. But again, you have to remember, I mean, he's playing in the era of Alex Ovechkin, and it's sort of along the line of like Brad Park never won the Norris Trophy, but he was a runner up like 6 times because he played in the era of Bobby Orr, you know? So I just put Kovalchuk at 7 because I said, I think he's better than everybody else below him on the list.
Yeah, well, when I saw your final list, the one that blew me away was Matt Snazlin only got 10 points.
Matt Snazlin was on 1 ballot.
It was mine.
1 ballot. Yeah.
3-time
yeah.
All-Star and a second-team All-Star once and was just below a point per game. Now, look, I know his career was short. He played some in Sweden, and then he went back to Sweden after, you know, having – 8 great years with Montreal, but that was a pretty good 8-year run that he had of a point per game almost every year, topped by 110 point season in 85-86. I know growing up in New England and watching a lot of Bruins games that every time he played the Bruins, you were like, oh man, not this again. Maybe he's not in the top 16. I thought he was, but for him to only appear on 1 ballot is shocking to me.
Yeah, it was your ballot, and you are the lone wolf there, Sean.
That's not the first time.
A couple other things before we get out of here. Zdeno Chara was on Sportsnet on After Hours with Scott Oak, and he said at 43 years old, he is not considering retiring yet. He's living in the present, believes they'll be back playing this season, not going to get ahead of himself, still wants to play. Zdeno Chara is in his 22nd NHL season, and he's still playing 21 minutes a night and quality minutes for the best team in the National Hockey League. Why should he retire? There's no reason if he wants to keep going.
He shouldn't, and I think secretly he and Tom Brady have a bet to see who's going to last longer.
Oh, I wonder if that's true. I want to dig into that and see if that's true.
Yeah, they're both in their 40s, and they've both had a lot of success. And maybe that's some sort of Vegas side bet we could get going.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. But I mean, look, Chara, he doesn't look any different to me than he did 5 years ago. Honestly, I think the guy is timeless in the NHL. And the beauty of what Zdeno Chara right now is he's willing. He just says, give me the 1-year contract. He's okay with them. And he'll, you know, he totally works around the Bruins and what their needs are. Letting the Don Sweeney, the GM, do what he needs to do, and then cycle back, and we'll figure it out. The dude just likes playing. He just loves playing, and he can still play.
and he's got a good situation. I mean, they're competitive every year. They got some good young defensemen that he gets to work with. And that core has been together forever. Him and Patrice Bergeron have played together for a really long time. Tuca, Brad Marchand, they all know each other. They understand each other. They're willing to work with each other to kind of, you know, make that whole situation work. So, you know, I think he's one of those rare athletes that realizes the grass isn't always greener somewhere else. And it may be greener in money, but it's not going to be greener in happiness or legacy or anything else. And to me, he seems perfectly content with who he is and where he is.
Yeah. And the other thing with sticking with the Bruins, David Krejci, right? Today, Monday, as we record this, David Krejci's got a year left on his deal, turns 34 tomorrow, Tuesday. Happy birthday to David Krejci, by the way. He's not going anywhere anytime soon either. He wants to keep going with the Bruins too. It's a great situation they have going in Boston right now.
Yeah, he was on one of those calls that a lot of the teams are doing. He was on today with the Boston writers and said, you know, his contract's up next year and, you know, he's not why he would, but he came right out and said, I'm not contemplating retiring. He'd be 35 when that contract's over, you know, and yet there's a different tier when it comes to signing a new contract and, you know, some of the protections that are there or the punishments are there that for signing an over 35 player. But he has no interest in going back home or doing anything else. He did not say, you know, I'm going to be with the Bruins, but he did say, right, you know, I plan on continuing to play. I would think the Bruins are going to be in that conversation.
I would imagine they'll be in that conversation for sure. Last thing before we head out, we're all looking for silver linings during this quarantine period. And certainly the Tampa Bay Lightning have one for Steven Stamkos. He told the Lightning in a website, I think it was their website, that during the pause has now allowed him to recover from the surgery that he had to repair a core muscle injury. He had that surgery March 2nd. He wasn't due back until right around now, but he's been skating at their practice facility because it's open to injured and rehabbing players only within local regulations. And if we're able to start this thing back up, the Lightning are going to have Steven Stamkos in their lineup.
The Lightning are going to be dangerous if we start this thing back up. But Stamkos is healthy. I think they've, you know, kind of found their way a little bit compared to some of the struggles they had early in the year. And you know, they're still a relatively young team, so there's been a lot made about, you know, who's going to come out of a long stoppage better, you know, a young team with fresh legs or an older, smarter team. And that's kind of when you look at the two teams that are the class of the East, really, is the Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're kind of the studies in that, right? For the most part, the Bruins are an older team with a lot of experience, and a lot of the Tampa Bay core is a little bit younger. Hedman's younger than Chara, obviously. Kucherov's still a young player. Vasilevsky's younger than Rask. So, you know, there could be an argument made that they're going to have the fresher legs and they're going to be able to hit their stride faster than maybe the Bruins. And I think it'll be a really interesting dynamic that plays out. But I certainly think a 100% healthy Steven Stamkos might tip the scales in their favor a little bit.
Yeah, we can't wait to see it all unfold, and we hope that it all unfolds because we need our hockey back, and we're hoping to get it back at some point. And then I want to say near future, but just in the future, let's say. So this was fun, Sean. I'm glad we were able to catch up with Eric Lindros, though. That was enlightening to me to hear the take from the Hall of Famer.
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, you said he's a part of the Flyers. The Flyers are a part of him. It's part of that city. It's such a great tradition. And, you know, until the hockey does come back, we'll be here and we'll be doing these hopefully every week. And hopefully that'll give you a little bit of your hockey fix until we can see the game actually on the ice again.
And until we do it again, everybody out there, stay safe.